guys and fresh guys, and welcome to the Ninja Night School special Nauticon wrap-up spectacular extravaganza, day number 2 for Saturday, April 8th, 2006. Today, we've got a couple interviews today with Zach from the Packet Sniffers, and we've got a brief little interview with the BaseNet Radio guys. So it's going to be short and simple. We've had a kind of a busy day here. It's been really fun, really eventful. A lot of just, like always, just a lot of crazy stuff going on. So we're going to go ahead and cut to the interviews because it's now 4:31 in the a.m. on technically Sunday morning. So I'm going to go ahead and stop talking, put these interviews together, and get some sleep so I can wake up tomorrow. So enjoy these interviews. And by the way, the intro and outro music is a CD that was risk-free. It's a local band of a Cleveland band. So enjoy. Okay, guys, so I'm up in the hotel room here, and I'm chilling with a very special guest for Ninja Night School, and, who are
you? I'm Zach from the Packet Sniffers.
We all know who Mr. Zach is. Now, me and Mr. Zach, we were talking earlier about some pretty cool shit, and I said, man, we need to make a little clip of this for a Ninja Night School. So, we were talking about parabolic displays.
Yeah, parabolic, the use of displaying a pseudo-hologram with a parabolic mirror.
Say, like, for example, like in some vehicles, they have the little heads-up display.
Yeah.
And all that fun stuff. Make it look like it's floating in the air.
Yeah. And usually that's done with a curved mirror down in a chamber, and then some kind of a curvature top with a hole in the center of it. And usually through the hole in the center of it is where you're seeing this. Over the top of the little hole is usually a little dome. And, you know, the dome is known as many things, a capper or something like that. And the capper basically holds the light rays in and lets you see almost in every condition, no matter whether it's light or dark around you.
Awesome. Now, I remember a game back when I was a little kid. It was one of the first 3D games I ever remember seeing. It was made by Sega, I believe. Yes. It was Time Traveler. A little cowboy dude, yeah. And some, yeah, weird stuff. It's like a little geodome.
Yeah.
How was that working?
Well, actually, it was based on... Are you familiar with any of the Don Bluth games, like Dragon's Lair or, yeah, Space Ace?
Yeah.
It's a full-motion video game. And that, you know, it looked totally like individual sprites, but basically it was a total full-motion video game like those were.
Okay.
Just actors over a black backdrop. That's how they got the realism, because, you know, they didn't have to simulate so many backgrounds and stuff like that. And so it worked full-motion video, actors over a black backdrop with this parabolic mirror setup. Basically, the display was sunken down in the cylindrical part of the cabinet. And then, you know, the display was produced there, and with the use of this bowl-shaped parabolic mirror, the image was forced up through the chamber, through the little hole in which you were viewing. And you were kind of level with the playing field, so it just popped right up. The light had nowhere else to go, popped right up and bounced around the domed, concaved top, the topper. And it tricked your eye into seeing, you know, what looked like a hologram.
Awesome. Now, what all got me on this little topic, my little sister recently got a new vehicle, and she had a little heads-up display, which told her speedometer, speed, and all that good jazz, and it looked just like a little LCD display, and a couple mirrors reflecting the image up onto the windshield, and I was thinking, wow, that would be really neat to hook up to my car. I'm planning on putting a computer in the car. So that would be real neat to just have all my system information or what's playing, what's streaming, so I could keep my eyes on the road. So do you have any idea how somebody might go about setting up some kind of like heads-up display for the car, or just ideas on something like that?
I've toyed with the idea, which I don't know if you're familiar with, the Pepper Effect.
No. Can you explain that?
Yeah, the Pepper Effect worked along the same lines as the parabolic method, in which basically your object of interest was stored down in a lit chamber, and the chamber went up, and in a separate chamber there was a slanted piece of glass, and basically your audience sat, they would use this in theater, the audience would sit back sit back into the, like the seating and stuff and look at the stage, and there'd be a slanted piece of glass slanted towards them, and the image from that would come up, the reflection would come up and bounce onto that mirror, and so it looked like whatever that was would be right on that mirror and bouncing out at them. Actually, the best example of this is, you know, when you're looking out a window and there's a light and that light kind of is bouncing, it doesn't look like it's on the glass, it looks like it's floating in between the glass and you?
Yeah.
That is Pepper's effect.
Excellent.
And that's basically what happens. What they used to do, which back, I don't know if you're familiar with the old 20s fright houses.
No.
It's like a fun house, basically. And they have them all over the U.S., way back, Depression era days and stuff. They use Pepper's effect a lot. One of the gags they always used was the woman that turned into a gorilla. Basically, it was this, they would have a girl standing down in this pit under the stage. And she, you know, she was kind of illuminated with a light. And then up through the chamber, where the ride was taking place, there was a slanted piece of glass, and the image would get projected on that and kind of pop out a little bit. And so, as the little tram would come through, the little crank, which back then it was a crank-operated tram car, like kind of like a roller coaster car, people would come through, sit in between the front of this glass, and then this image of a woman would pop up. The image of a woman would pop up, and it would kind of be almost 3D, it'd be almost floating. Where the mirror was, they'd have it set up so it would look like she's floating in the middle of something. And then she'd be standing there, and then they would pull down in front of her this big, like, kind of like a projector screen that had a photo of a gorilla on it, or a painting, actually, then, of a gorilla. So it looked like this gorilla was wiping down upon her, which, you know, back in then, it was her transforming. And so then this gorilla would pop out, and everyone would scream! But mainly, the thought behind it was, this simulated almost like a floating apparition. And so the same could be used in a display for your car. I have a mid-40s vehicle, well, actually late-40s vehicle, and the dash is rather expansive on the inside where the gigantic tube-driven radio would go. Well, I'm wanting to have a little display of some kind, the same effect, a little chamber that goes up, and at the top of my display I'd have a tiny piece of slanted Lexan. And so, I could have engine stats kind of floating in midair between me and the dash.
Excellent.
Yeah, so that's how I would get my VR dash display working.
That sounds cool. Now, we were talking earlier about some VR, and you've done quite a bit of neat VR work, too. So, you want to talk about that a little? Because I know you keep on mentioning the cave setup, and I'd like you to share that with the ninja listeners.
Yeah. Oh, well, you know, there's so many places to start with VR, because if you remember in the mid-90s, that was the thing, Lawnmower Man and stuff, and VR was going to be the next thing. Everybody was, you know, that was the elusive and seductive technology, with the headsets and the gloves, and transporting all of a sudden to another reality that existed beyond our plane of normal existence, and then all of a sudden disappeared. Everybody stopped talking about it, and I think that's because all of a sudden, normal computer technology got to the point where it just distracted everyone. Well, there are many forms of VR, you know, and a lot of it went way past the helmets. In particular, my current interest is in the cave, which is essentially a setup of kind of hexagonal or kind of surrounding walls. My ideal setup is just a simple two-wall setup, which you can make in the corner of your room. It's basically two walls that meet into a corner, and you've got two projectors. Each projector is projecting a different side of a virtual world. So you're surrounded by this virtual world with some just off-the-shelf projectors. You throw in some 3D speakers and the peripheral of your choice to manipulate the world, and you've got a virtual reality. Actually, the current one that I'm looking at is called the Unreal Cave, which uses the Unreal Tournament 2004 game engine, because it has spectator mode, which I don't know if you're familiar with spectator mode.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, you have one side that is your player. You have the other side that is a spectator that is arranged and attached to your player.
Kind of like a chase cam.
Yeah, chase cam, but set so where it completes the panoramic view. And then you mesh the two projectors so they're just pointing in the right area in the middle of the wall. And so now you've got one gigantic display powered by two computers simultaneously over the network. And so that is pretty much the whole thing right there. And so you can design your worlds in the Unreal Engine, and now there's so many cool hacks. You can have expansive worlds. You can have essentially 32 players in this world, or you can use spectator mode and have 32 separate screens. So you're getting these guys that have amazing setups. I mean, like, full ceiling, four walls, a floor. One in particular is an MIT project where they did everything. It was a round room. They had 12 projectors just for the walls. What was it? 12 projectors for the ceiling, and then the remainder was for the floor. You know, this does take some network and know-how. You've really got to have, the ability to pass some major bandwidth through when you're dealing with this many, and even if it's just for one person. And that's the thing, is they weren't intending this simulation to be multiplayer in the least. And they built some very, very intricate maps in which they could just look all around them, and they would be in the world. Now, it wasn't true 3D. Nothing was popping out right next to them. But it was still immersive in the fact that everywhere they looked, they were surrounded by their world.
Exactly.
And that's the whole point of VR. Virtual reality.
Now, what kind of software? Like, is there any kind of resources or stuff like that for, like, this kind of cave design or stuff like that? Where people were interested in resources, I mean, what could they Google or search for other than the cave?
Cave VR.
Cave VR.
Yeah, just Cave VR. Or
just say Unreal Cave.
Yeah,
is what
the UT Cave.
UT Cave.
Yeah. That's the UT Cave site's pretty cool. You can Google that and it should come up on first try. It's actually, projectors are still pretty expensive, but if you have the know-how and know where to look, Dayton Hamfest, you can find about anything that you want at a relatively cheap price. And for the results that you can get from a little elbow grease, the costs are more than worth it. Matched with your favorite glove and a reactor vest so you can feel the vibrations of the explosions. Then you're set.
Right on. Now, about with the parabolic displays, mm-hmm. and the pepper, if people were more interested in that and working on stuff like that, are there any kind of resources that you use or point them to?
For Pepper's Effect, that was a difficult one because I just had to experiment myself with it. If you were so interested in learning about some of these basically smoke and mirror tricks to simulate holograms, you would want to check out... on Google, type in dark rides.
Dark rides.
And you will learn about all the 1920s, 30s, and 40s dark rides they had around America and learn all their little smoke and mirrors tricks. You'll learn how to make things levitate. You'll learn how to make things pop out and seem like they're apparitions when, in fact, you're just using very, very simple things. Usually that'll cost you under $10.
Awesome. That's totally my style.
Yeah, definitely.
Excellent. Well, I want to thank you for taking the time to sit and talk to us about some cool stuff, and we look forward to seeing you around some more.
All right.
Cool. Awesome. Thanks.
Cool.
Okay, so I'm hanging out here with the BaseNet Radio guys. Y'all want to introduce yourselves here?
I would be Slick Zero. Silent Slate. Morbid.
All right, awesome. And now that I've got all three of you cornered behind a locked door, there's one question that I have to halfway embarrass myself, but I just really want to know. I'm sure it's out there, but tell me, what the fuck is OmniScan and where did it come from? Please, I see it everywhere. I don't know what it means, but I still laugh at it. It's hilarious. Please explain it.
Here. You got one on the left.
It is this.
Oh, shit.
Do you want the technical version of what it is, or do you want why it's said?
Here, what's it? Okay.
It is now on your phone.
Okay. OmniScan!
The technical version of OmniScan, which is boring and sucks, I'll say, and then they'll say the good version. Technical version is an injection you use when you're having either a CAT scan or MRI for contrast.
Okay.
So it's actually injection for small bits of metal into your system.
Yes, it's dye.
Yeah. Okay. Kind of like the nuclear dye or what they went into.
Yeah, exactly what it is. OmniScan is the brand of it. Now, the story of OmniScan, what we're talking about, is we were at Hope.
Right.
We were awake for 48 hours, and Echo found a roll of, like, a huge, like, nice big roll of these little tiny 1-inch by 1/2-inch stickers that just say OmniScan with in green ink on a little yellow sticker. And so what else to do in 48 hours of sleep heading over to a party on the train? Then stick it all over the fucking train.
And the city.
And the city. And the house where the party was held. And John Draper's back. 48 hours of no sleep, dear, equals you putting stickers on John Draper's back, thus touching John Draper.
As a matter of fact, the almighty bucket has it still on it.
Yeah, oh, the bucket is in the room here. The OmniScan with the original sticker. These are copies of that.
Oh, okay, so did you guys make those OmniScans? Okay.
So now it's just like a huge inside joke based on that.
Awesome. Well, I'm probably glad to kind of get a little background on that story, because I knew there had to be a little something interesting to it. So that's awesome.
Alright guys, thanks for listening. I hope you guys enjoyed a special brief little interview. Hope you got a little kick out of it. Maybe learned a little something. I know I sure did. And remember to check the Infonomicon gallery. We've been updating pictures today. And we'll continue to update pictures tomorrow as well. So, until tomorrow, we'll see you around.